Talking No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling podcast on the Social Suplex Network. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
Has the heat broken for everyone? Or
girls,
I guess come to you, Ann.
It's come to me and it has not broken, but it's allegedly going to break in the next couple of days. But, you know, I'm in hot and summer and I'm at the pool every day. So it's like,
you like
it's not
it,
a problem.
I assume.
Yeah. It's like being in a sauna for my muscles full time. And
Ann
I mean
loves
that positively.
Her heat shirt. Leah, but you've been freed.
I have been thriving today. Just today, yesterday it wasn't quite
where
I wanted it. Today has been like, I think it was like a high of 72 today, and it's
nice.
Like right now it's
oh,
at
wow.
like 68. All my windows are open. I pulled the AC out of my bedroom for temporary. I know it's going to go back in like in 2 days, but
yeah, but
I
you
need
wanna
this.
You want your little freedom. You want your open window freedom. I understand that.
Window.
I just heard high of 72, and I was like, at the end of June, I'm so frigid. Like, hell
and
on earth.
Shivering. She's sick for you, Leah.
I'm so sorry.
I would give anything to have this weather year round. Like, that is my ideal weather.
It sounds pretty nice to me. I mean, I like to get a little hotter, you know, like for brief periods, but then I like when it really goes back down in the evenings and at night. So. It broke here, like, everyone loves our weather talk. It broke here, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago or something, but it's been raining torrentially on and off ever since. So it's not like, but it's temperature wise, it's nice, but it's damp to go outside and you
the
get wet all over your body really hard. Mm-hmm. Leah, this is a good week for you to be sharing with us what's making you happy, because you have experienced happiness.
Imagine after all that, I was like, what's making me happy is the weather.
I would red card you. I'd be like, vetoed.
Well, it's not that, but I don't want to hear any lip about doing one that we've done before.
Okay, always a great start.
When I aggressively say, don't give me talk back.
My lips are sealed.
What's making me happy right now is this current season of Taskmaster, which is truly, truly unparalleled. I was really looking forward to it because I knew Jason Mantzoukas was going to be on it, and I knew he was going to be a perfect addition to the cast, and I was really excited. But I've fallen in love with Fatia El Ghori, and she is my love. She is the love of my life.
Such a beautiful wife.
She's the one that says bruv pretty regularly, right?
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
Yes. I'm trying really hard to be her third wife, her third partner, and we'll see how it goes.
You're trying
to
be
her
third
already?
Yes, she has two divorces already. So I'm trying to be number one.
Really?
Yes.
So not simultaneously. Wow, good for her.
Yeah.
Wow, I love that for her.
I'm obsessed with her. I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, she's great, and I love little Matthew Gaius Baltar Ghosts, as I keep calling him. I mean, I knew him from Ghosts, but he's such a little freak. I had no idea how much of a freak he could be. Although I probably should have guessed, because pretty much the entire cast of Ghosts has been on the show now, and they've all been quite weird.
Yeah, yeah. This season, I think we were talking about it. This season is somehow like the best, like, as a whole. Like, there's been casts that had people that I individually liked better, but I think this is the first, like, this is the cast I've most liked the entirety of.
Interesting. I think they're definitely up there for me. I think there are some others that are like a little higher, but yeah, it's a great season. Everyone get tasking.
It's on YouTube, I think.
Yeah, all the old seasons.
We're pirating it, but I think it's. You don't. Oh, is the new one not on?
I have no idea. I haven't checked, but I'm just like.
No, it is, because I was watching it there.
Nice. Sometimes when I'm at work and I need background noise, I watch it on YouTube. And they make you watch a lot of ads, which is.
Yeah, that's why I originally pirated it, because I was like, I knew it was all on YouTube, but I was like, I can't live like this. This can't be happening. YouTube is out of their minds.
I really registered recently, like, how many ads YouTube is showing for everything now. And I had kind of an out-of-body experience about it, where it was just like, how could it have come to this? Like, and, like, their server costs must be fairly tremendous, I presume. I guess, in that sense, I can see how it happened. But I just felt really like this was never meant to be monetized. YouTube? Right. This is never meant to be monetized. Like, this is for people to post their skate tricks. Like,
YouTube was invented so that people could look at the Janet Jackson Super Bowl incident for free. We need to stay close to our roots. That is what YouTube's for.
This is for perverts and busybodies to get free content. No money should be exchanging hands. Okay. Well, I think we can just get right down to business. You guys ready to talk wrestling?
Should we get into wrestling?
Are you guys ready to talk wrestling? Okay. This week on Collision, Tony Schiavone interviewed Don Callis, who came out flanked by Lance Archer.
I loved Lance Archer.
Do you think this is going to be a really bad night for me? I want to be clear, there's no substances involved. Just raw dogging this and really doing a bad job.
Although, just a wet, wet mouth.
Although what, Leah?
I was just going to say, we should praise ourselves because we watched Collision this week. Every time we should, someone should be putting points on the board for all of us.
Yeah. I thought you were going to be like, every time we watch Collision, an angel gets its wings.
I think it should be like Venmoing us like a dollar each every time we watch.
That's true. If you desperately want us to watch Collision, try Venmoing us a dollar. It might go a long way towards getting a result.
That makes me feel like when mine was little and my parents would be like, you only get your allowance if you do your chores.
Hey, there's that donation link on Red Circle. It's in our show notes.
Please don't ever send us a donation thinking that it entitles you to us watching Collision. Because it doesn't.
Just send it to us to support the show.
Exactly. Just send it to us because you love us and for no other reason.
So we can buy more craft fabrics from flea markets.
Oh my gosh. I have some really nice fabrics out right now because I'm working on some lampshades. Oh. Well, we won't get bogged down at all.
Remember how you said, are we ready to talk wrestling like 10 minutes ago?
I think that my body was rebelling against the idea of us getting into it that fast. Like, I just didn't like it. And so that's why the words were getting caught in my wet little mouth.
It was like, don't you want to talk more about fabrics?
Please, no. Tell them about your difficulty with figuring out how to make three-dimensional objects out of fabric. Like, just kidding, but it is hard. It is difficult for some of us who didn't do very well in Calc BC.
No, my spatial reasoning is really
it's terrible.
No, not good.
I can't do that.
I've told you guys about when I was taking Calc, and at some point I was like trying to get my smarter friend to help me with it. I was doing a really bad job, and she said, and I don't think she meant it to sound condescending, but she was like, yeah, when you get to like discs and spheres, like that's where you can really tell who naturally has a mind for it and who doesn't. And it was like, okay, well, you're not wrong, but I think it was cruel to put it that way.
Yeah, wow.
If you can't tell, like, which way to slice it, then yes, you're probably not a natural mathematician. Well, I can't. All right, this week on Collision, Tony Schiavone interviewed Don Callis. Josh Alexander was there. He had no headgear on. It's really not that noteworthy. But
somehow he looked weirder. Like, yeah. I know. When he got to the ring, I was like, who is that?
It felt like the missing eyebrows, like, stood out even more when there wasn't something else on the head to distract, you know?
Yeah. No one else is on our level about those eyebrows.
No one's talking about it, even though AI claims they are.
Yeah. It hasn't come up in a single article, actually.
No.
Don Callis and Tony Schiavone both dressed as bellhops.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was obsessed.
Beautiful maroon.
With and the why? Fact that they matched. And it was such a like weird outfit to match.
It felt like they'd planned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine getting to work in your beautiful burgundy maroon suit and then seeing Tony Schiavone and being like, oh no.
If I was a wrestler backstage, I would 100% be doing and roping other people into my bits where I just kept handing them my luggage and being like, here's $2, I'm room 306, thank you so much.
Oh, to be the bellhop. I, for some reason, thought that what you were saying is that you would be getting everyone to wear the same outfits a lot.
Yeah, and I thought your luggage was going very to Shivani. It was like, oh, like, well, I mean...
I like one of those, you know, videos where it's like all the women at church get their husbands to come wearing the same shirt. I was like, that's what you'd do if you worked at AW, and it would be really great. That would be amazing.
You know, to be honest, I'd also do that. Sure. I would love to do that.
Like a little bellhop Wednesday one of these weeks.
I feel like there's enough women on the payroll who are married to male wrestlers that you could get that going.
Yeah.
Lexi.
Right. The idea of Mox, Juice Robinson, and Big Bill showing up somewhere wearing the same outfit is so funny.
It'd be good. They really, listen up, girls.
I think Mox would no sell it so hard. I think he just, like, there would be no indication that he even noticed.
He might legitimately not notice, too, is the other thing with Mox.
Such a good point. Okay, Don Callis had come out to formally present Okada as the newest member of the Don Callis family. So Okada came out. We got a little recap footage of his attack on Kenny at the contract signing. As Don Callis said, you can almost smell the diverticulitis coming out of his mouth. That's one of the more repulsive things I've heard in my entire tenure as a wrestle watcher.
I appreciate so much how many people say things about diverticulitis that make it clear they don't know what diverticulitis is. It's like, his diverticulitis fell out.
Well, it just sounded like it was like, you're in the intestines, so smell-wise, I just don't like the idea of what would be happening, you know, diverticulitis or no. That's my thought. Okay, Don Callis cut a little promo on Kenny, basically being like, you have no friends. You had friends once, but you lost all of them. And I used to be your friend, and now I'm not anymore. No, you were his uncle, and he was removed powders. From your care for a reason.
Yeah, the state had to take him away.
Yeah, he was like, you're stuck in a bed, you have a colostomy bag in, and you have no friends. So, you know, enjoy that. Mark Briscoe hops on the mic and comes out and says, Don Callis, please shut up. You sound stupid, you weird-looking bastard. Kenny does have friends. He has me, as we all know.
As we all know.
We really haven't discussed how Mark Briscoe seems as desperate for friends as Will Ospreay does, to be honest.
The thing is, though, it's different, though, because he doesn't seem, like, desperate for it. He just is self-assuredly being like, everybody is my
Everyone's
friend.
My friend.
If you're a good person, then you're my friend. And if you're not a good person, then you're not my friend. And I am the sole barometer of this because somehow I am judge, jury, and executioner, but in a very charming and amiable way.
Yeah, I think it is that self-assuredness that's the difference because Ospreay, like, on some level has known, we'll get to what's going on with him, has known in the past that, like, he doesn't have the friendships he desires and is like, I'm looking for something I crave. Mark Briscoe is like, if I see someone and I like them, they're my friend. And I never doubted that for a second.
Ospreay has experienced rejection. Briscoe has never felt that. He never knows. He never.
I think some of you did tell us that Mark Briscoe and Kenny were friends at PWG or something, or ROH, and I would say that doesn't count.
No.
Unless I hear about it. Unless I fucking hear about it.
Maybe you didn't. Good friends if it hasn't come up this whole time.
In all these years.
The other thing that was funny about this is we found out about this segment while we were streaming on Twitch, and I couldn't understand it when I was first told that this was happening. What?
It's like, who came out and did what? So he was like, he has friends. He has me, of course. And then he also has a really wonderful friend that you might have heard of. And the music hits, and out comes Kota Ibushi, whom we haven't seen in... Two years, maybe? I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah, probably.
And so he hauls ass down to the ring, and he takes out Josh Alexander, and then Okada gets back in the ring, and Okada and Ibushi are having a little stare down, and then they exchange some strikes, and Okada rolls out of the ring. Don Callis takes him backstage, and Okada and Ibushi are scheduled to fight next week. And what do you think about Ibushi coming back? And we don't see Kenny. Kenny is, again, the colostomy bag situation.
The amount of energy they are putting into having people who are not Kenny and Okada building this feud is pretty funny. It's like, actually, we're going to have Don Callis, build a feud with Ibushi and Mark Briscoe, and that's going to count. Okay, guys.
It's like, that's two men, so that's worth one Kenny. Like, I'm a little confused.
I'm happy to see Ibushi. Like,
I am.
It was one of those very funny segments where I was like, I'm glad that he's back. Glad that he seems healthy. We've now, like, we're going to get to it, but he seems like he's wrestling okay. Everything seems positive. But I just keep being like, well, I wouldn't have done it like that. Would have done it differently, I think. And then when Ibushi and Okada stared each other down, I straight up was like, they can't keep getting away with this. You can't keep doing this to me. What was their relationship in New Japan? You can't keep having a stare down.
And it's like,
please.
I know there's a lot to it. I'm fairly certain there is a lot. I believe there is.
I jumped on a cage match and tried to figure it out. And they had fought five times before.
That's so many times.
But they'd also tagged together pretty recently. And so
Okada and Ibushi?
Yeah. Huh. And so I was like, now what do you guys feel about each other?
Now what do you mean by that? What exactly do you mean by that? But
of course I'm afraid to ask the question.
Yeah, of course.
None of us dare. Well, I want to say something about Okada. So he came out when Don Callis summoned him. Like, I have a brand new son in my stable. Come on out. And he comes out and he's looking around and it was this expression that he's had like many, many times of just kind of like the mildest possible interest in what's happening. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden I was like, this is the expression of a man who has amnesia, but isn't telling anyone. Like, he just suddenly got amnesia and is coming out like, where am I? Well, I don't want to let anyone know that I don't know.
You know, in Quantum Leap when he leaps into somebody before the credits and then he has to like figure out where he is and what's happening. Yeah. That is the look that Okada has where it's like, huh, so I'm in some kind of arena and people are cheering. I have a belt. Okay.
That would add up because when I saw him at Dynamite, I was like, why are you walking like you've never held a belt before? Like, he was kind of like holding his body. Like, he was like, what do I do with it? Am I holding it right? I've never seen one of these. What do I do with it? Maybe we cracked it.
Maybe it was the Quantum Leap guy was like, okay, try to walk like a wrestler, I guess. Like, I don't know.
He's like, I'm putting together the clues. Like, okay. But then it's like he doesn't know where he is, and maybe he doesn't even know when he is.
Yeah, it could be any year. Like, he's looking for clues. He's like looking to see if he sees a smartphone, like, you know? Or know, like, it could be the 80s.
Does anyone have a watch with the date? Like,
Copy of today's newspaper. They're like, newspaper? On paper? Like,
all right, okay, that's a clue.
That's something. Don Callis is like, look at my new son. And he goes, that's my father. Interesting.
I think that might be right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to crack the case wide open for me, I think.
I'm immediately pretty excited to think of Okada as a time traveler who kind of never knows when or where he is.
Yeah. And no wonder he's only doing these, like, very unimaginative stare downs, because he's like, okay, this guy's walking up to me. I guess I'll just stand here.
Right. Like, I'm asking, do Okada and Ibushi have history? Okada is also asking, who is this man?
Is he my tag partner? Have we fought? I don't know. I got to get in a cage match later. And then he's this tells me nothing.
Or it's like he knows him, but he's like, well, we've been a lot of things to each other, so it is hard to know what we're supposed to be now. Let's just do a nice neutral expression and let's put a little like a forceful wrestling punch behind it. That could mean that he's my great friend or my great enemy.
Yeah.
Okay, so there we go. Solved it. Easy. Solved it. It's easy for us.
We no longer have problems with Okada.
This is working great. Okay, so any other thoughts on any of this before we move on?
Like, I was happy to see Ibushi, but him coming out as, like, Kenny's proxy, doesn't that kind of imply that, like, he, like, there's not going to be, like, a reunion of him and Kenny, like, on screen? It's like it already happened off screen, and it's like, why?
It's the second time that has happened. And actually, the third or fourth time. With, like, if you look at the various times that we wanted to see an Elite reunion, and it was like, oh, it happened off screen. You didn't see it.
Yeah. Yep, don't worry about it. And for once, like, Kenny and Ibushi, we understand the history in New Japan, and we're interested in it, and they keep being like, you don't need it.
Yeah.
Not even during Pride. So sickening.
They did at least call them the Golden Lovers on commentary. That's true.
They did. And I guess I had forgotten that they didn't even do that last time. So
what did they call him last night, though? His associate?
They called Nina Tony's friend and associate. Come on.
At least that's a little funny, though, like, because Tony's just out there saying it. You know? Right. We're boob buddies. Okay, so then on Dynamite, Okada interrupted a Bucks backstage promo to introduce his new friends, those being the Don Callis family, who came in with Rocky Romero leading the pack. And Rocky said, "Well, oh well, boys, who would have thought from the days of Roppongi Vice and Chaos feuding with you guys in the Bullet Club to all of us on the same side?" Matt said, "We have a long past, right? And we like all of you guys. Your boss, however, kind of a prick. Careful with him." And then he goes on to say this stuff about how they all want to strap Okada up. So it's like, it's very funny that they're like, we're sharing Okada with the Don Callis family. It's a timeshare. And it's like, that's humiliating. I thought you were millionaires. You should own your own plane.
They've been cracking me up because Nick posted a defensive Insta story where someone was like, "Okada's gone." And he reposted it and was like, "He's not gone. We're just lending him to the Don Callis family, okay?" And then they posted a group selfie with them all smiling very big smiles that was very much giving, like, "Our family is going through a divorce." Trying to not to pretend it.
Everything's fine on Team Taz. Yes.
And then for this, for like Don Callis's vibe to be like, "I have bought and sold, paid for this man. This man is mine. He's my new.
I signed
beautiful,
all the papers. Your precious United States government.
He is now the prize exhibition in my zoo. I'm going to milk this for all it's worth."
He's milking him.
And the young Bucks are sort of like, "Yeah, and you understand you have to give him back. You have to give him back."
Don Callis don't know that. The second thing that I want to say is just like, wow, it's really nice when you have history to just pop into the scene and just say the history. Just be like, it's weird that we're working together because of X history that we have.
Right.
I think that is... that's all we're asking for sometimes. Some of you might be like very simplistic. Well, it's a simplistic form.
Yeah. And like, I think sometimes people think what we're asking for needs to be like a 20-minute video package. Literally, that's what we wanted. Literally just somebody saying, "Hey, we used to fight. Not anymore, though."
Right. Yeah. In this period, when we were in X faction and Y faction, we were fighting. But now we seem to be on the same side. And I'm expressing myself about it like... Rocky, on the one hand, is like, I can roll with this because I'm a bad guy and, you know, bad guys will just, like, use other bad guys.
Yeah.
And that's Matt's vibe, too. But he's like, it's a little different with Don Callis, actually. So it's like, good. That's a good little character note. And then we'll get to it in a minute. But you have a totally different vibe from someone like Takeshita. That's wonderful. This is all you need.
That's all you need.
Because, again, we really just want to know, like, what's happening in the present? How do you feel about everyone in the present? And you can acknowledge the things in the past and then just be like, so we like, you guys are fine, Don Callis, whatever. Right. Yeah.
And also take note that this happened with them talking to each other.
No
video package involved.
No monologue. No single man in the ring monologuing about, you know, to each other.
It's a simple conversation and then some face acting from everybody. And the face acting, I would say, was really good from everybody. Yeah. Because, again, some people aren't as happy about the situation as others. And you read it by looking at the faces.
And we, as experts, can look at those little expressions and say, oh, he feels a little differently than he does.
The thing about us is we look at faces every day and decide what we think they mean. So this is perfect for us.
And just the littlest expressions, that'll feed us for a week. That's all we're asking for.
My God. So that was really well done. I would really like it if more people would just do this. And then you can do other things, too. You know, it's like you can do it. It's okay to do a video package sometimes. It's okay to do a monologue. It's like all the other things are okay. This is just a really helpful way of grounding us in how you want us to feel about you as a character and what you're doing.
I did like the Kenny and Ibushi video package that they made. That I was like, well, I've seen better fan vids on, you know, YouTube.com, but this was pretty good. But, you know, It would have been blown out of the water by a 20-second mm-hmm. segment where Kenny and Ibushi talk to each other backstage.
Oh, my God. Yep. If only. Yeah.
I agree. Anyway, so Matt's like, well, we're sharing, as we all know, we're sharing Okada. We all want, what did he call him? We want to strap this young lad up. Incredibly funny stuff.
Pervert talk, yeah.
And we want to hurt Kenny Omega. And what better way to do it than by hurting his golden lover? Isn't that right, Greg? Because Greg is going to be fighting Ibushi. And Greg is like, 100%. I'm thrilled to see you guys, by the way. And I'm about to fucking kill this man. So please watch so carefully because you're going to love it, boss. You're going to fucking love it. I love being a bad guy.
He's got his little hood pulled up. He's looking like the Unabomber. He's doing little bad guy moves.
Rippling with muscles, covered in them. Let's keep those functional this time. Yeah. And that would be my prayer.
Protect the titty, Greg.
Protect the titty, please. The titty and the neck and any other muscles that you've ever felt a little twinge
muscles,
from. Let's
bones,
be careful with them.
All of them, yeah.
What did you describe this match of Greg versus Ibushi as? Like, the match between
the most injurable men? I think it was just there was a lot of tension built into this match, not really from what they're doing, just from knowing how many times in the past it's gone wrong.
And yet male podcasters came out of this episode being like, I don't know if Hangman should be doing that. It's like, why are we worried about him?
I know. It's like, Hangman's fine. Greg could never do a moonsault. Okay? Greg and Ibushi? Has to be protected from himself. If Greg or Ibushi tries to do a buckshot lariat, that's when you can intervene. Stop. Crazy. Greg doesn't murder him. Greg does not win this match, but I thought it was a fun match. I had a good time.
I enjoyed it.
I was so happy to see little Greggy. I just really miss best friends, and I'll never see them again.
I thought you were going to say I'll never get over it, and I was going to agree, but I hope we do see them again in some capacity.
If they have fucking
who
surgery.
Are these old, like, if Dustin? The Rock and Roll Express are still coming out on TV.
That's true. Maybe in 30 years we'll get to see them again. They'll be tied up by some babe in arms right now by, like, Buddy Danielson's going to tie Dustin and Greg up backstage, and we'll be so excited.
I hope it's Nora
and everyone
Moxley.
Will be like, who is this
Nora
for?
Moxley and Buddy Danielson, yeah.
Just those old girl perverts. They need it. You know what? Now suddenly I'm like, you know what? Yeah. If there are old girl perverts out there who want to see the Rock and Roll Express get tied up and bleach poured down their throat and they take bumps in the ring and stuff, well, bring them back for another round. I'll do anything for my fellow girl perverts.
Okay. If somewhere a Rock and Roll Express podcast suddenly reactivated and three girls were suddenly, three, you know, older women suddenly older get on the women, mic and was like, wow, I could have danced all night.
We bring Tuttle Talk back in 2055 when Dustin and Greg got tied up by the Moxley, the Danielson-Moxley intergender tag.
Just as Mark Briscoe predicted, I have empathy in my heart right now for the Rock and Roll Express for the first time.
I know. Now I'm like, let's see it again. I'd be so pleased imagining my compatriots.
Yeah. And this offer only for girls.
Only for girls. That's the thing is, I was thinking Rock and Roll Express was for boys, and I was like, what the hell? Get them out of here. But thinking about the girl perverts, I'm like, obviously they should get anything they want.
We have to remember to put those girl pervert glasses on when we're judging stuff like old men doing stuff in the ring. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Tully and Arn maybe even, you know. We watched that Tully match when he was young and it was pretty horny. So, you know, there's some
fighting?
Grandmas out
God,
there.
That was sexy.
Magnum
P.I.
Not P.I. though, right?
I think it's T.A.
T.A. Yeah, yeah.
I do call him Magnum P.I.
I know. It's
what else are you
going to
call him?
Yeah.
I will never, ever get over Josh being like, I just didn't expect it. I just did.
Why did you give it to us, Josh?
I didn't know that that's what you were going to do with that match. Well, you shouldn't have given us hardcore gay porn.
I know. Like, how could you do anything else with it? It turned out it was fairly filthy stuff.
It's like I set this tape to the pervert factory and it came out perverted. I don't know what happened.
Oh my God. It was a real, like, because we'd watch it right after it was Christian did the tap out or Cope did the tap out?
I think so. Together? I th- yeah. They did. they had done something that made Josh think of that cage match.
Yeah. But it's like when you, we'd watch that and been like pretty filthy stuff. And then it's like you watch it and you were like, wow, they're not making it like they did in the 70s. they say that porn is grosser now, but it isn't. It actually was grosser then.
It is like, no wonder wrestling was popular in that time period. Like, it hasn't reached the heights that it was reaching back then. No wonder women were going to wrestling matches.
Oh my God.
Bring it back.
Where else were they going to see this? They didn't have the, they didn't have Al Gore's internet yet.
They didn't. Yeah, you had to go to like an adult video store. Someone had to lick you in your eyes while you rented it.
I love imagining our foremothers skulking up to some counter being like, do you have Magnum T.I. versus Tully? And don't talk to me about it.
Then publishing their thoughts like in a zine of some kind.
I need the pay-per-view for my pervert girl watch party. Oh, my God. Wow. Okay, what are we fucking talking about? Oh, yeah, I think I did this wrong because I missed. So the other thing that happened, yeah, Greg. So Greg, they have a fun match, fine. And Ibushi wins. But then the segment earlier with Okada had actually ended with, like, everybody left happy except for Takeshita, who was doing some actually wonderful face acting. And he and Okada had a little stare down. And Takeshita said, remember, this is temporary. And then Okada said, okay, laughing to himself as he walked off. And I have to say, Okada has a lot of suitors right now, as commentary would put it.
Yeah.
Okada has a lot of suitors right now. And this was probably the first time I was like, that's an intense sexual chemistry. That's what I want to see. I like that.
That was instant fizz. Like, that's the first time that I was like, hey, I'd watch that. Hey, when are we scheduling that? I'd like to see that.
Yeah. And really, I haven't seen either of them have, like, real sexual chemistry with anybody, even despite Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher's, you know,
they're in
textual
love,
affair, but
yeah,
not on screen.
No, not on screen. But this Takeshita, there was so much emotion on his face. Like, it really was just like flames at the side of my face.
Well, and the reason why I loved that so much is that Takeshita has, for so long, has been cool as a cucumber. Like, not even really Kenny has gotten him heated.
No.
Like, he's just kind of like, you know, is impenetrable. And so for Okada to get under his skin and all, get him like riled up, that's what mama likes.
That's what mama likes. Yeah. That's what we go to the, local pervert video store for.
Immediately, I'm just playing the Nicole Kidman commercial in my head.
I can't get over thinking about our 70s foremothers.
I could talk about our foremothers for the next hour and a half, like, no problem.
I want to meet happy. Them. I wish I knew that.
Yeah. If you're a foremother and you're listening to this, like, shoot
please
us a little
out.
Email.
We're very, we respect
our elders. If you're related to a foremother, like if
your
grandma
mother
got you into
or your
wrestling.
Aunt, yeah, if they ever said anything kind of suspect about
And maybe you didn't even realize it until this moment. Maybe
you're thinking
back.
Put the pieces together now.
Get us in contact. We'll have them on the show.
Yeah. Send us your stories of your mothers and your pervert mothers and grandmothers.
Yeah.
And what they were getting up to, you know, at these wrestling shows. I think that's it. I think that's it. And it's just that, this point about Ibushi walks really weird. Like, he really walks like he knows that he has so many muscles. And it's not even that he's being careful with them, but he's like, I want them to see every single one of them. Which is good for him. No notes.
Every
like
time
it.
I see Ibushi walking anywhere, I just think in my head, I wish he was still riding that bike. Remember that time?
Oh, yeah.
He rode that bike around.
Wow.
I wish
you're in our brief Ibushi moment. Yeah.
I wish every time I saw him, he was just riding a bicycle.
Yeah.
It's funny. Sometimes people tell us about Ibushi deciding to make time work differently, and then I remember that I think that's like the first wrestling content
literally
we ever saw. The before any of the other gifts that our pal Mary tried on us.
She tried the 25-hour day on us first. It didn't get us, but every once in a while people tell us it like it's a real deep cut, and it's like, oh yeah, that was my first introduction to wrestling.
And I didn't understand what was happening, really.
No,
it was
just
when we were told this fact, we did not know where we'd end up with it.
No. It was kind of like, what an interesting fact from a world that I'll never experience. Look at us now. Look at us now, Ma.
just using wrestling slang in our daily lives all the time.
Like real sickos.
Yeah. You said today that some children's books are really over amongst the children of your friends. And I was like, yeah, can't help it.
I actually did try to phrase that a different way, and I couldn't find another word that just communicated exactly what was going on with these children and if you give a mouse a cookie.
Yeah, huge like, pops when it comes out, I'm sure. Yeah.
Big
just,
pops.
Sometimes you use jargon because it's just a faster way to say things, you know?
It's like, why is bedtime so loud upstairs? Oh, if you give a mouse a cookie. That's
yeah.
Why, yeah.
It's mega over, so there's
it's
huge
really
pops.
Over.
Yeah.
So. I did want you to just say in how you saw the Adam Cole shirt. And there were multiple people online. So it says Paragon. But it's split, so people had, you know, I thought it said X, I thought it said Y. I still think that what you saw is what I'll now remember forever.
I know. I saw Papagon. Because just the way the graphic, like, interacts with the R, you really can't, it just, yeah, Papagon.
I'm saying it to myself, like, Papagon.
I also, but, like, I don't know what you guys picture when you hear that. I think of Glugon, except Papagon.
Glugon. No, I hear like a plaintive little voice, like a child, and Papa gone. Anyway, just wanted to get that out there. Okay, what else were the Young Bucks getting up to? You might ask. Great transition. They opened Dynamite with a pre-tape. Well, they didn't fully open it, but you know, whatever. It was the beginning of Dynamite. They have this pre-tape on the big screen in which they were like, Swerve and Ospreay, you have a match scheduled for the second half of the show. Oh, wait, no, you don't, because we're the fucking EVPs, and so we moved it up, so it's now. So get out there and do your match. And so Ospreay's music hits, and it plays for a long time, an abnormally long time, which is so exciting, until eventually Ospreay races out. He's still putting his wrist tape on. His boots are unlaced. He has to lace them up in the ring.
He looks disheveled. He's not wearing his big robe. He's just wearing a t-shirt or his
great. And he dove into the ring to make the Osprey, like, the chanting part. Like, he would, like, hop
in sideways. He
kept
throwing his whole body onto the ropes.
He was, like, tugging shit onto his arms as he was up on the ropes, being like, it's me, Osprey!
And his vibe was like, I'm not late, I'm here.
It was the way I've rushed into every of our podcasts since the pool season started. Like, I've eaten most of my dinner. I've eaten a little of my dinner.
I was so thrilled with this. And then Swerve's music hit, and Swerve comes out, and he's still putting his shirt on, which I thought was quite funny because it's like, you were nude, I guess.
You had a lot of time.
Out.
Yeah,
you're still putting your shirt on now after all of that. You were fully nude. You were maybe in the shower.
I love that because, yes, he was putting his shirt on, but he was so much angrier than Ospreay.
He was pissed off.
Ospreay's vibe was just sort of like, God, how did this happen? I should have planned for it. And Swerve was just like, those motherfuckers, I'm going to squash them like bugs.
Well, it was like Ospreay had already forgotten that the reason he was late was not that he had stopped for an Egg McMuffin before the show.
Right. That's a man who's used to being, like, used to and comfortable with being late. And Swerve's vibe was like, I pride myself on being on time. Yeah. I pride myself on being ready and being there when I need to be there. And look what has happened to me because of you fuckers. So they hop in the ring, they're fighting Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. Commentary's really hammering home at the beginning of this, I say for no real reason, commentary's really hammering home that it's so important to have your special private time before a match and to do your stretchings and to do your meditations and to get in the right headspace. And without having done that,
the Bucks probably tipped off Blake Christian and Lee Johnson.
Absolutely.
So they're all warmed up and ready.
They're all warmed up, ready to go. They did everything they needed to do, but Swerve and Ospreay got to do none of it. So it could be a rough night for them.
Yeah.
I thought that was really smart. This all
I liked
worked
it.
Really
yeah.
well.
It is true. You know, like sometimes before a tennis match, the team will like book a court for the half hour before to hit balls. And if the other team did that and you didn't, it sucks.
Literally, it's like even just for my work meetings, actually, like I don't actually meditate or prepare for them in any way. But if they happen, if I don't realize I'm going to have one, and then it's like, oh, I have a meeting now. That's a bad, really bad time for me, mentally. Yeah. My headspace is totally fucked.
You do have to get in the right headspace.
Yeah. Yes,
I have a 4 p.m.
You
meeting on
do.
Wednesdays that I always forget about for some reason. So I'm always, like, ready to, like, I'm always
the
about to, like,
is,
leave for the pool or something. And I'm like, oh, God.
Like, the reason you forget about it is that it should be illegal to do that to you.
Exactly.
That is incredibly
on hump
illegal.
Day?
Yeah.
I know. It's with someone in Central Time is why it is, but it's not appropriate.
It's classic Central Time behavior.
You should work around me.
I understand what you guys are saying fully, but it's also completely alien to me because my goddamn culture is that nobody schedules a meeting. Everybody just fucking Zoom bombs.
What's happening at your workplace is so... I wouldn't survive a day of it. I would not survive one single day of it.
You have to have a top handy, a work-appropriate top handy, because you're also camera on culture, which is
camera
even
on
worse.
Culture. Yeah, my workplace, the culture is that you have, the moment you log on in the morning, you have Zoom open, and anyone can video Zoom bomb you, just call you via Zoom at any time. They don't have to warn you, they don't have to tell you what it's about, and they don't have to tell you who else is on the call. The amount of times I've answered a call and had four other people on the other end.
Oh God. I would be sick with fear all the time.
If there's four people, you need to schedule that. Like, everyone needs to mentally prepare for that.
Absolutely. Or it's like, if at the very least you gotta tell someone that they're all in there. It can't be like at least suddenly at a tribunal.
Shoot you a little Teams message and be like, hey, is it okay if me and her and him all Zoom, call you right
now?
So
you can say, like, say, no. Yeah. No.
It's not a good time. I'm in focus time right now.
I never got out of my pajamas, so I'm technically still wearing my nightgown.
I've been wearing my pajamas, like, well into the afternoon most days, so it's really not a
situation. I always have morning meetings, so it's like, I'm dressed for the whole day. I can get on screen, but do I want to? No. No. Anyway, what are we talking about?
That was Swerve's vibe, where he's like, am I here? Yes. Do I want to be? No.
No.
He was like, you Zoom bombed me and I didn't have my top on. that's my energy.
He was putting on his work-appropriate top.
What if someone pointed out is like putting on his top so he could pop it right back off?
Yeah, it's coming right off. I don't know why you need to put it on.
But I guess it's like, if you don't have a lot of extraneous gear, there's only so many things you can not have on and still have it be appropriate for prime time.
I wish he was like trying to put on like eyeliner or something.
That would be
cute.
If he had a little mirror in his hand and he was like,
so cute.
If the Bucks pull this again, keep that in mind. That would be cute. Okay. So they pulled out the win. The Young Bucks music hit and they came out in the middle of the match to like watch from office chairs, which I thought was very funny. And then afterwards, Swerve booked it immediately for them. It was just like, time to fucking kill. But they had brought security, and security made a wall between him and them. And Ospreay was also there just being like, gosh, we're having a lot of excitement. And so Swerve and Ospreay got back in the ring, hopped on the mic. Swerve was like, you two motherfuckers. And he was the one who didn't get to say motherfucker. He said, you two are such fucking pains in the asses, and everyone has had it up to here with you. I'm not going to go another year dealing with you two. It was like, wow, they hear that once a month at least. It's not more often.
Kenny at home with his diverticulitis is like, won't stop fucking shitting on the floor, Swerve.
Kenny's just like, it's never fucking worked. It's never worked once. And so he challenges them to a match all in. Ospreay's like, let's raise the stakes. He says, and honestly, this was so funny. I mean, it was great. He said, we're all done with the power that you keep abusing. You guys have done more harm than good for this place. So let's strip that power from you. At All In, put the EVP titles on the line. And I said, wow, we're getting political these days. It is thrilling. We had our wonderful week at Arena Mexico. And we said some really positive things about, you know, the idea of like not being fucking jackasses and not being xenophobes and being friends with our neighbors. And then Ospreay hops on the mic and says, no kings. So brave for a Brit. So brave.
Hell yeah.
Or as he says in his country, no tyrants.
No tyrants.
Of course you can keep the nice kings around. They're a great tourist attraction.
I was really delighted. So he says, put the EVP titles on the line. The Bucks are immediately furious. Nick especially acting his little heart out. He says, what? Now, commentary seemed to not quite know what to do with this. What do you guys think put the EVP titles on the line practically means?
Ideally. If Swerve and Ospreay win, they become EVPs.
The EVPs.
And they start booking the show. Ideally, in a perfect world, Ospreay would have some kind of managerial authority, and we would see him try to exercise it.
And I think people in our Discord were suggesting that he'd be like, okay, so your new booking, you know, pattern is going to be that you're my best friend and we're best friends together. And
we wrestle to be my best friend.
And you can't say no and you can't reject me because I'm the EVP.
He's walking around. He's like, I'm booking you to come to my birthday party. I don't know that that is what will happen.
I don't know that it is. No, I think it might just strip them of the titles, which I was like, well, like, if you want to end the story of them, like, exercising power and go a different direction, then, like, sure. And I assume that's what they're probably
doing. I have to assume. I saw someone being like, you guys are all scaring me by being like, this is how the Bucks begin to retire. And I was like, oh, I didn't get that at all. Mm-hmm. I just think that they're like, it's more of an impediment than a help at this point to have, like, ultimate control. Like, which it makes sense. Like, you can only have a bad guy character have all the power for so long, which we've said before. Right. Like, it would be good for them to not have all the power and then be having to deal with the repercussions of what they did while they were high on that power. Right. That would be smart for them as characters.
Right. And they can always, I mean, if we're pretending that the EVP titles can be treated like belts, they can always win it back in the future if it pleases them to.
That'd be so fun. if Tour and Audrey came EVPs, but then someone else beat them and took the EVP title, I mean, that's fun.
And I love the idea of the Bucks just watching and being like, our precious powers, and look what they use them for. And it's just stuff like, we need cannolis in catering. We never have cannolis in catering.
And Nick's just like throwing a cannoli at the ground, like, this is garbage.
And I want to see something where, like, Osprey is like, yeah, let's get cannolis. And Swerve is like, no, let's get cheesecake. And it's like, and the Bucks are like, you can't vote separately. What is happening here?
You have one vote.
You have one vote.
That would be, it would be amazing for, like, Osprey, I don't think, notices. Just like, sure, one vote. Swerve is like, it's two people, two votes. It always has been. Even when you guys, like, I read your contract. Like, do you not understand that you have separate votes? And, like, they're just like, Matt's like, no, we're one person.
I feel like Matt would be like, for what? What would we use it for?
To disagree with each other? Sort of just so patiently being like, two is more than one. Two votes is more than one vote. What do you mean? This is like two votes.
Us before the podcast talking about how many votes everybody was going to have about a thing. I was like, I think we're just going to agree on what we're going to do.
I think it's likely we'll just talk about it.
Yeah, we'll probably just talk about it. Yeah. Anyway, so that'd be fun. Whatever happens, I think it's, to me, this seems really smart. Like, this seems like a good move and like a good twist for the characters. If you're like, we got to move into a new mode, I'm like, this is a very good way to propel you into a new mode.
Yeah, it's great storyline wise, and it's also like, it adds something really interesting to All In, because I've been worried about them, where I'm like, what the fuck are they even gonna do at All In? And I knew they'd come up with something, but like, for them, like, now it's like, it's really interesting, and I don't know how it's gonna go.
Yeah. I'm so psyched. It's so fun that we're going to All In, and we're going to see, like, Hangman Box. We're going to see the Bucks against Swerve and Ospreay. Like, this is going to be a good show.
And it's so fun that we're going is not something that we've been consistently saying since we bought tickets.
No, not the entire time. No.
There's been periods of time where I was like, why are we doing this? I wonder if we can sell our tickets.
Yeah.
But we didn't. And
we didn't. And now look where we are now.
Feels good. Mm-hmm. Feels fucking good. Okay, so they throw this out there. The Bucks, I don't know, somehow there's kind of like a melee. Is like, they, Swerve goes over the ropes onto the security guards. Osprey is just like clearly thrilled behind him. Like, we are having the best fucking night of my life.
It was so funny because there are so many points in this whole segment where Swerve was doing like mad, very serious face. And next to him, Osprey was like, tonight is amazing. This is the best night of my life. It's just like such a funny energy.
It was amazing. His feet weren't touching the ground. Like, he was floating, flying. Being like, we're having so much fun right now.
And he kept getting so handsy with Swerve. He was like grabbing his face. Right. He was like, Swerve hugged him last week, and he was like,
that's
stage.
On the table. Physical contact is on the table. Well, because the Bucks were like racing. They were like, okay, yeah, no, we're not going to deal with that right now. So they left, and Swerve's just staring after them, like doing like Arthur meme, like just like, I'm so being mad at those guys. And Osprey basically just like comes up, hugs him, and kisses him on the cheek. Like, what fun we've had. We've been amazing. We both were so good on the mic. We said exactly what we needed to say. And you fought so good. And I fought so good. And we're best friends and we always will be. And I said, I love you. I love you, little boy. I love you. And I love Swerve. Swerve was just kind of like, okay. You, like, it's like, didn't really stop looking that mad, but clearly was kind of like, oh, God, yeah, you need this. Oh, okay, yeah.
It's just 100% just it's fine. A household cat and dog together. Absolutely. Like, just full time.
Yeah, it made me so happy. And Osprey had that big yellow black eye.
It was so, wow, it looked intense. It was, like,
it was the, one of the crazier shiners I've ever seen. Oh, okay. And then we had a Bucks backstage response where they, I don't remember exactly what they said about, I think they were kind of like, how dare you suggest that? But it wasn't that clear whether it would be booked. And then they suspended Swerve for, quote, laying hands on an AEW official. They suspended Swerve, right?
Yeah. And I was looking at reviews this morning because I was trying to put my notes together, and I saw that and I was like, where the hell was I? When did they when did they suspend Swerve? Did I miss a segment? And so I went and I looked it up, and I realized that it was the segment where Matt's breasts were so out of his shirt.
That's what it was, because I didn't remember this either. Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah. It turns out I didn't hear a single fucking thing he said.
No,
because I was just staring at his chest the whole time and making perv comments about how beautiful he is.
She was at the video store.
I was at the video store doing pervert shit. I had no idea he was saying plot relevant stuff, so I had to go rewatch it and be like, oh, he was talking when he was when his boobs were heaving.
And that's not where his mouth is, Leah.
He's like, my mouth is up here. Please respect me, listen to the things I'm saying.
I think it had even more, either it was the same shirt or it had an even more kind of distinct, like, what is the shape where it kind of comes down rectangular but then goes, I don't know, it's really nice.
It's kind of not good. A standard shirt neck, I would say.
Well, I mean, on like a shorter scale, like when I was saying that that man looked like Long Pack, like that's what I mean. This is like a long version of normal.
It's like a really slutty boat neck or something.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. Great look. And it was plot relevant, though. Yeah. So they did that. So that'll come back. Okay. Mox got a promo in the first half of Dynamite where he's in, it's his classic, like he's on the steps somewhere. Yeah. He found a space for himself.
Although he was in a stairwell, but the sound was pretty good. Like, I could hear him pretty well. And I liked the lighting and the way they kept doing the camera cuts. So I was like, this is pretty good.
I like those classic stairwells, but you're right that I didn't even really clock that the sound was much better than it has been in previous iterations of this type of promo.
Usually he definitely prioritizes the aesthetics of where he's giving his promo over the actual functionality. So it was nice for this to work.
This had everything that we needed. And the gist of his promo, he was like, Hangman is literally the fucking best, as we all know, and yet fails all the time, which sickens me. I'm begging him to take this belt. I'm begging him to step up and take my fucking belt and not get distracted crying about how someone hurt his feelings. Fight me. Fight me and win. Fight me and win. I want you to fight me and win. And I liked that.
I did.
It was
like
so
that.
Beautiful. It's such like a good return to the original Death Riders stuff where he was like, none of the young guys are like stepping up and being like the killers they need to be. It's like, look at Jon Moxley going on a little AEW original like loop-de-loop and coming out at a good place.
And you know, this is not to forgive anything that's happened with the many months of the Death Riders, but I can see how, if you didn't think through what the stages of your story were going to be and how they were going to develop, I can see how this very long, soggy middle came to be where it was like, well, I kind of said my thing, so now time for one of them to win. And it's like, we have another 7 months on the clock. We have to fill the time.
And actually, I think at the time in the middle, it was like, what? Because other people were much madder at the storyline than we were. And it was like, well, it's bad, but it's kind of a classic soggy middle storyline where people are poorly executing something when they didn't figure out a way to keep the middle interesting. Right.
It's just good. You do have to really think if you have to fill a specific number of pages, you got to think at the beginning, like, how many pages can each thing I'm coming up with realistically fill?
I mean, how many, like, when seasons of TV shows used to be 22 episodes, how many seasons of TV shows that we've seen, they started well and they knew how the season was going to end. They had the finale perfectly planned. But somewhere around episode 14, they're like, we're all getting through this together.
We're so tired.
Right. It was just kind of like, all right, we're doing a Christmas episode. We're doing a New Year's episode. We're doing a road trip episode. Yeah. We're doing a Valentine's Day episode. We're doing a bottle episode. We're doing a can we get away with some kind of leap day episode? Let's do a leap day episode. So we had a lot of those. But I think it's nice it came back around. It's nice for it to come back around because it was a good angle at the beginning. So it's a good angle here at the end. It's working very well.
Yeah. And I like that they're trying to land the plane well. Like when Swerve lost, like I really wanted him to win at the time, but I think in the podcast after it was like, yeah, but it would be nice if they, like, landed the plane well instead of just, like, nosediving it into the ground. Right. So I'm glad that they did move on to do that, which was not at all clear at many points.
Just because you had such a bumpy flight that every single one of the passengers vomited and the whole plane smells like puke doesn't mean you shouldn't try to land it gently.
In fact, maybe it's more of a reason to land it gently.
Let's try and mitigate this a little.
Let's not make it worse. Let people get off the plane with a little dignity.
I don't know that anyone's getting off this plane with dignity, but so I thought this was really good. Okay, then Hangman, main event of the show versus the Beast Mortos. And this was a really fun match that for some reason seems to have, I think we referenced this already, incited a lot of talk about like whether or not he should be doing moonsaults. And it was like, how could that be what you took away from this? Didn't you have a nice time? Didn't you have a nice fucking time? What do you mean?
It's like, so wrestling, literally such a weird thing.
Wrestling fans can never just enjoy the art that they're giving. Yeah. They always need to investigate some backstage thing that they have none of the information. You don't have enough information to be saying stuff like this.
Well, it's very funny to be like, and this is, I understand this isn't really how like commentary on, you know, like an art form works. Like you should, in some senses, like you should say what you think or what you do or what you feel or whatever. But it also was just like, do you think that Hangman isn't thinking about, like, it's like, he's actually smart. There's so many wrestlers that I think would be really fair to be like, if you're listening, I would maybe stop doing X, Y, and Z because you don't have any conception of like long-term consequences. So someone should intervene on your behalf. Right. Yeah. Hangman isn't really one of those men. So no. I'm like, I'd kind of trust him to be assessing it.
And they're his knees, you know, he wants to keep wrestling. Yeah.
The other thing is that Hangman's been pretty clear where he's like, I like wrestling and I like being good at it and I like to be a star, but I would give all of you up for my children so quick. So he's not going to cripple himself.
No. Such a weird thing. And it was like, did some kind of press release go out? Like, why are we all on this topic?
What do you know that I don't?
Yeah.
I don't know.
But sometimes it is just like, why do wrestling fans hate wrestling so much? Why do they hate being happy? I don't get it.
And it's like, don't you think it, well, whatever. Anyway, listen, you know, we don't, I haven't even seen any of the firsthand sources on this. I mean, I don't even know. I've only seen people talking about it, you know, so why am I even talking about it? But it was very funny because it was like, this is a great match. How could that possibly be your takeaway? Like it was really fun. It was really fun. Yeah.
And again, on a match or a show where Greg and Ibushi wrestled and like,
I know that it's like your concern is misdirected. Anyway, so afterwards, Hangman wins, the lights go off. When they come back on, the Bucks have Hangman lined up for an EVP trigger. They EVP trigger him. Matt is shrieking, "You made us do it!" which is, you know, he understands his character. The man understands his character.
Yeah.
And the Death Riders cruise out, and Mox is, I think you can just see him quivering with excitement because it's time again for the thing that Tony promised him.
He said his adult video store.
He says, what do I like? I like choking others with chain and when I am choked with chain. That's the only thing that's driving me, really.
Just full-time choke play. There needs to be some in every segment.
We're talking about, like, the happy end of the Death Rider segment being Hangman winning, but Mox is like, the happy end is that I get to choke somebody.
Or I get choked to completion.
He's already pitching, like, Hangman, what if you win by choking me? Choking me all the way to completion. Like, what if I pass all the way out from choke?
I'm choke. Hangman's being like, what's up? Fully we the don't vision have that I have. To.
Yeah.
Oh God. It is kind of now I'm just imagining like Mox is doing his like really serious Death Rider choking, and then all of a sudden he lets go and goes, okay, you do me. You do me. My turn. No, instead of that, the ops run out to save Hangman, which just continues to be so fun, especially like I'm really worked up, and for an overrun that's great, you know, it's like often you're really sleepy in the overrun, but I'm like, oh, I can't wait for Will Ospreay having the best night of his life to run out for an even better night where he gets to save someone, and then it's the ops instead. At first it's like, oh, okay.
I think if the ops did like a interacting promo where they talk to like Hangman and Swervin, I feel like I would be less like, because every time they come out I'm like, what? Oh, right.
right.
But it like never sticks because it's always like, Samoa Joe cares about this? Like,
right. Okay. And it would be so easy to have that conversation because you know Ospreay wants to have it. You know, like a backstage segment where Will Ospreay is like, Samoa Joe, thank you so much for coming out tonight. I really enjoyed it. You just really did a great job and I loved it. I thought we did. Do you want to go get a drink? And
you were so good in ROH. You were my all time.
Yeah, I would love to see Samoa Joe just giving him a sidelong look of like, it's a lot of energy and just being like, okay, kid. Okay, yeah, no problem. That would endear Samoa Joe to me. Anyway, the ops come out. And they're still outnumbered, so then Ospreay runs out, and then I'm happy again. And Ospreay runs all those other big, nasty dogs off, and he's so good at it. And then he slides to his knees to Hangman's side to be like, are you hurt? Are you hurt, my love? My friend, my best friend. And I like that very much. And then we got a post-show promo where Ospreay and Hobbs help Hangman backstage. Ospreay is saying, have we got a doctor or something? And this is, guys, this is a med bay situation. This is not for the nurses. The nurse's office is not equipped to handle this, okay? And he's saying, check on his throat. He got choked out pretty bad. And Hangman, like, beckons and pulls him close and says, he'll have to kill me, Will. He'll have to kill me. Which is so, like, really, like, kind of shocking and erotic. Like, wow.
Yeah.
And you were just not getting airflow to your brain. So it's like, you're just saying whatever comes into your head. And Ospreay says, let's not get that far. Come on. Let's not get that far.
Everyone around Ospreay is having so many passionate feelings, and he's just like bouncing around next to him, like, oh, that seems like a lot. But okay.
He's like, don't tell and show yet.
No. Oh,
not while we're friends. You have so much to look for, like me, Will Ospreay.
He's like, not tonight, not on the best night of my life. I was thinking that we could go and we could have a drink after this, and maybe in my room, and we could watch my favorite movie, and I don't know, then I was thinking we could have a sleepover. That'd be really
fun. My mom said we could order pizza.
And I'm allowed on the bed. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. I'm allowed on the bed. Oh, gosh. All right. What else do we have here? Oh, do you want to say what Taz said on commentary?
Oh, yeah. He was like, yeah, here in AEW, there's a lot of clicks. And I was like, Taz, tell me more. Tell me about the clicks as you see them.
He also said, he's like, there's friendships you'd never expect. And other people have like strong feelings about each other. And it was like, okay, you fucking tease.
Who else is friends? You tell us right now.
Friendships I wouldn't expect. That's the only thing I care about. That's literally my only interest.
I'd love it if Taz walked us through catering, like in Mean Girls, being like, those are the sexually active band geeks. Those are.
Yes, I want that very badly. I think my immediate thought was like, I want him at the blackboard doing the School of Rock diagram of like, this is how all the people go together and these are the categories. But yeah, same thing basically. It's like, let's go deep on
map
this.
Map it
like,
out, yeah.
Let's maybe do a full dynamite on this.
Yeah, Taz's guide to the cliques and friendships of AEW. Like, yeah, I would watch that as like a six episode miniseries. Like, absolutely. That could be all AEW All Access.
But then it's like, if you did it on Dynamite, that could be like the thing that's holding the episode together. And then occasionally it's like he's trying to introduce a clique and then they're getting into a big fight. And Yaz is just on the side being like, oh, well, fuck me. I'm taking them on a tour.
Interesting Jones over here.
And Taz spends the whole match like bitterly muttering to himself, like, yeah, I was going to explain it, but sure, just hit each other, like, whatever.
It's really rude. I don't do this to you.
To me, that would be a perfect night's entertainment.
Yeah.
Leah, do you want to talk about this thing about the AEW way? It's really about the clicks as well.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I was being a little philosophical this morning, and I did have a drink, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it as well, but like,
I thought, like, you meant you had a drink this morning. I was like, wow.
She had a fun day.
Look, I went to work. That's all anyone can ask of me. No, I was just thinking about how, like, the Bucks came back and immediately hooked up with the Death Riders. They're, like, always so careful to travel in a pack. And Ospreay knows that. Like, he knows, like, the value of, like, friends and has been desperately searching for one and not really doing that great of a job at it. Meanwhile, Hangman also knows that there's value in friends, but he is fighting it and has always fought it. And, like, I think, you know, somebody got dunked on today for being like, you know what, I'm starting to think Hangman doesn't respect friendship. Yeah, that's like his whole thing, is that, like, he's like, I think I can do it on my own, and he can't. He never can. And so it's interesting for this to be coming to a place where once again he's going to have to be like, fuck. Yeah. I guess I have people.
But Hangman's so good at, like, go ahead.
I was just going to say, he told the Death Order, like, I've been in groups before and it didn't go so well for me. It's like, he's got his little trauma.
When it's like, he's so good at it because it's like, it's all coming from very realistic. Like, it's like, as Mox said, you're a complicated man, but it kind of meant like, you're a little fucked up. Like, you've got a really fucked up relationship to yourself and like what you think you deserve and what you think other people like want to give you or be to you. And it's like, you find it really difficult to depend on people, but it's partly because you kind of like find it difficult to depend on yourself and you've let yourself down so many times. It's just like a very realistic stew of just like, yeah. And that's being a man in 2025, I believe. That's what I hear about the loneliness epidemic. I personally have a lot of friends, so I don't know that much about it. But
Hangman's traumatizing the male loneliness epidemic.
No, but I actually do, despite having many friends. I find much of it quite relatable. It's just like, yeah, it's really hard to, it's the mortifying ordeal, baby. Like, it's really hard to be a person and have good relationships with other people.
And it's also, I mean, it's difficult to confront, to be like, the reason why I can't get things I want is that I'm actively stopping myself from getting them.
Yeah.
It's like, that's brutal. That moment where you're like, ah, I am the key to my own destruction. Cool.
Yeah, that's really, really hard. And we've simply all been there.
Yeah. Hangman's character gives people like so much to work with in their promos against him. It's just like you see Mox and it's like, I, even though it was all like kind of Cornetti type stuff, like you're always crying about your feelings or whatever, it was so like entertaining and enjoyable to watch him like calling it all out that way. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when someone is like a really like juicy, fully realized person, I'm like, this is about Gaudy Knight, actually. This is the same thing about Gaudy Knight.
Yeah.
Where it's like, right, when one of the characters is like a real person, then suddenly it's like, oh, they both have to be, I guess.
Right. And
it's
everyone interacting with them kind of has to be. Yeah.
People are always stepping up to be the realest version of themselves with Hangman, because otherwise, like, it's like they don't want to be like the two dimensional person next to the three dimensional person. Like, you have to meet him in the three dimensional space.
Right? Yeah. You saw it with MJF too, you know?
Yeah. Well, he actually saved Hangman. Yeah. He actually saved Hangman. Not the other way around. Yeah, Taz's world of clicks. So Hangman and the Bucks, now Hung Bucks at an end for now. That's sad.
It's really hard for me because I was watching it being like, how am I going to defend this one?
Well, I was about to kick it to you, Leah, for your notes app apology.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Hangman started the violence first. He buckshot lariated Matt last week.
By accident.
By accident.
I think he meant it.
Oh, you do?
Oh,
do you?
You do. Wow, someone's feelings on friendly fire.
So you feel that he did make Matt do it, is your defense.
Yeah, he didn't want to.
just like, my defense
he was forced.
Matt was right. Matt was right. Listen, the thing about the Bucks is you don't need them to be right. You can still love them when they're wrong. In fact, you have to. If you love a young Buck, you love them when they're on their worst
support behavior. Bucks rights and Bucks wrongs. And
Bucks wrongs, yeah. Any other thoughts about any of the people involved here as we head towards All In?
I think everybody's doing a good job.
Yeah, me too. It's all going great. I have been so thrilled, and it's so fun to see like so many fun, good storytellers all working on the same story.
I know, and working on like it's fun that the storylines are crossing a lot right now, which is always annoying when I'm trying to create categories for our podcast. But it's like when you get the best stories, because you know the most complicating element in any story is usually like another person who wants and needs and fears different things than you. And so it's like those are all interacting in really fun ways right now, where it doesn't feel like anything is like a, like, even though you're like, I think that I know kind of where we're going with some of these, it doesn't feel like you're on like, you know, a straight track. Like you're like, oh, we keep getting there a different way than I thought we would, which is delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, which the beginning of the Death Riders had a fair amount of storyline crossover and, you know, felt big, which was good. So
we just got through that soggy middle, and what we can do is we'll ultimately, and many will not like this, but I believe it's probably what history will do. We'll fold those two firm ends together and it'll be like the soggy middle never existed. And someone is out there yelling and they're like, we'll never do that. And it's like, well,
you will
probably will.
Well, because it's like when it's not actively happening, it's like, well, you know, it wasn't that long and it didn't take up that much time.
Yeah. It was a mere fraction of my life, you know, of my one wild and precious life.
Right. It's like even like our cold, drizzly British summer from last summer, like feels less significant now, you know, so.
Now that it's hot and summer, that's all we can remember.
That's right.
Hot dog summer.
Hot dog summer. Yep.
Oh my God, it really is hot dog summer too.
It's hot dog summer, hot ready.
Oh, Will, I hope you have the most funnest time at All In for hot dog summer.
Hot and ready hot dog summer.
Hot and ready hot dog summer, my goodness. And I sure am. All right, let's move on to the actual, Tony Storm, you know her, got a pre-tape on Collision. She's once again wearing her Carmen Sandiego costume, and for the first time, and it is a Carmen Sandiego reference,
yeah,
right? Yeah.
Yes.
And for the first time I was like, because she's timeless and Carmen Sandiego is lost in time and that's why it's happening. It hadn't occurred to me. And that's the beauty of a simple art form, is that, you know, like even no matter how simple it is, an idiot can still miss things. So then in the middle of doing this, once I realized that, in the middle of doing the schedule, I had to go watch a bunch of Carmen Sandiego videos on YouTube, and I was singing the theme song and just thinking like, wow, that story of Carmen Sandiego is not that sensical. I don't think it makes really a lot of sense at all, but I just loved playing those games.
I did too.
Yeah, I don't even know how aware of any story I was.
Well, I think she's
finding the lady.
She's committed crimes. Where in time is Carmen Sandiego stop her crime and solve this mystery? Where in time is Carmen Sandiego? We're on the case and we're chasing her through history. And she's stolen and she's stealing things throughout history, which you shouldn't do.
So it's like a national treasure for children.
Well, yeah, but with time travel in, I mean, sure. She's stealing them like from where they are, I think. You know, it's like, oh, she's stolen the Eiffel Tower. Like,
you know? I don't, in a way, if she is stealing like lost artifacts and stuff, maybe she's on like an archaeological preservation journey.
I wonder if they get into that, and they seem to occasionally make shows about her, you know, like a little animated show. And actually, I saw a video of one. I didn't watch it. I was just like, what could that possibly be about? All she does is steal things and be lost, and I
maybe
find
she
her.
Could go back to the Library of Alexandria and like save some manuscripts.
Maybe, and maybe they've done that. But if they haven't, Anne, let's get you to the writer's room.
Yeah,
we got Jazz a job for you. Okay, so that's why she's dressed that way. And the content of the promo. So she gives this promo.
This was a killer promo.
I know. I'm like, you can't read it. It's just like every line a banger. Every line a brand new banger.
Mm-hmm. And the things, like just the little things, like she said, since then you've been eating steak, playing on your telephone and trying to kiss me. And it's like just saying telephone instead of phone is so funny, you know?
And it's like just an amazing, you just don't see the third one coming.
No.
You
know?
She really understands comedy. Mm-hmm. She said motherfucker. And I'm glad we got to the bottom of what happened there. Probably bleeped.
I rewatched it on Max today. And they did bleep it on Max. So it was just unbleeped on Fight.
That's but fucked up.
She said it very clearly at the camera. Yeah. So they like you know, blanked out the word, but you could see it really.
Amazing. It's fucked up that you can see cock and balls on Max, but Toni Storm can't say motherfucker.
That is
not that much cock and balls, unfortunately. I'm just kidding.
I saw him on thepit.com.
And on the pit, I saw a lot of stuff.
Yeah, the cock and balls were the least of my concerns on the pit.
Yeah, that was like the most innocuous content. I saw like a lot of like non-sexual cock and balls too, like towards the end when there's just like people everywhere and they're just like in the background having medical procedures and their clothes have been cut off.
Not
it wasn't sexy
ones.
At all.
No, not sexy. And that's something to remember about the human body is that it isn't inherently sexual.
No. You know?
It's just meat. That's a great
it's just meat.
Tip.
Just meat. Yes, it's just meat.
Not inherently sexual.
You'll be shocked to hear it on this platform, but we understand.
We're, a body we're is just here being like, not everything has to be sexualized, guys.
Just a body is just a place
the rest
you live.
If you could calm down a little bit about sexualizing all the bodies.
You know, you'll be naked probably every day for your entire life, but so few of those times will be sexual. And that's what people aren't talking about on this podcast usually.
So true. That's what the podcasters here will never tell you until now.
There's a first time for I guess they must just port it over directly from TV.
Yeah, it must be the same stream.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we solved that. Well, she said motherfucker. And she's just so, like, it's like we got to the end of this and I was like, when she loses that belt, they should be publishing a book of her promos. Like, I should be able to buy a commemorative book of her promos.
Yeah. I want to buy some kind of art. I don't even know what it would look like, but of I sincerely believe you are the greatest of all time. I am not, nor was I ever meant to be. I am a manic, neurotic, erotic, sexually questionable, consistently sweating, bottom heavy, transatlantic whore.
That's just like, oh my God. Yeah. Unbelievable.
You really, it should be cross-stitched, and I assume it will be. It's the kind of thing that it's like, it can't go very long without being cross-stitched. No. So.
You would think, yeah. It's like right up there with like, the medicine is not working. Mm-hmm. Like there are like a couple of like lines from AEW promos that are just like
perfect.
Top tier.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, that is greater than most of what this beautiful, simplistic art form can produce. All right. And so then Dynamite open. Tony's arriving at the arena. She immediately gets ambushed by Mercedes, who's wearing this outfit that is so much look. I loved it. I mean, there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
Just the black and the gold and the, you know.
The gloves, yeah.
The gloves and the gloves.
I don't know why the sparkly, fringy gloves is what set me over the edge, but that was the moment that I was like, I'd die for her.
Yeah. I mean, her energy was fantastic here. So she's wailing on Tony and she's shouting, Tony, you want to play games? You want to embarrass me, you stupid little bitch? Well, let's play. You will never beat me. You will never be better than me. It was quite intense. And then Mina ran out for the save. Maybe security ran out too. I don't know. But Mina ran out and kind of intercepted, and she was tenderly clutching at Tony and just rubbing her elbow, which was a funny way to comfort her, but I liked it very much. And Mercedes kind of threw the mic down and left. And I liked it.
It's just like with the Takeshita thing, it is very fun to have a wrestler who's been pretty cool and above it all this time suddenly really get disgruntled. Like, that really works for me, for Mercedes to just be like I don't really understand you, and it's making me angry.
Yeah. She's like, and I hate how much I like how you smell. I'm pretty sure how I feel about that is not normal, and I don't like it.
And it's your fault.
It's your fault. Yeah. It is like it's nice to have seen when she does that thing after during matches sometimes where it's like someone will get a move on her and she's just like, how could you possibly have gotten that move on me? But like magnified so much and outside of the ring. And like she's usually had control outside of the ring and suddenly she doesn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're doing a really good job. I think it's like there's less happening with this build than there is in the men's world title, which there kind of has to be because it's like these are two people instead of like 10 people with like intersecting storylines and stuff. But it's like the Tony promos are really like so good that they, you know, not that it needs to be saved from, but you know, it's just like they're not doing a lot, but I am enjoying it.
It doesn't feel like lacking.
Yeah. No, I think it was on the last episode of Trish and Sarah, they kind of walked through like the three biggest matches for All In, the Okada, Omega, Mox, Hangman, and Tony Mercedes. And they were talking about like the types of builds they were as like three different types of builds. I thought it was really, really interesting. And if you don't, I mean, I assume you listen to them, but like, you know, go listen to them talk about it. And they were talking about the Tony Mercedes one as having been kind of front loaded. And so then it's about like maintaining energy less than like the Hangman Mox where it's like we know that there are story narrative elements that are going to keep being introduced as we move towards All In, because like we aren't to the place where like the outcome will be possible. And I think that they're doing an amazing job of like, we did our big promo. We're not like really like learning more about each other. There aren't going to be surprises like, or twists. Like it's just that the way that we feel about each other is becoming more and more intense the longer that we don't have that match to release it. And they're doing that incredibly effectively because it's feeling more and more and more intense without them, as you said, Anne, like having to like add more elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's really good. We also got a women's casino gauntlet qualifier match on Dynamite featuring Athena, Thunder Rosa, Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. Stat had a segment on Collision this week. It was a backstage interview where she was airing her frustrations about like not being seen or respected at AEW and being like, I've done everything right. Like I've tried to be a good person and no one pays attention to me and I don't get like booked and it just fucking sucks. And Yuta, real rude little baby brother, came up behind her and was like, I hate to say I told you so. And she was like, I hate to fucking say I told you so. And hit him and was like, shut your grimy little mouth, Yuta, you fucker.
Good line.
It was the most big sister that she's been in so long. Like, as a big sister, I've had that experience where I'm just like, you are near me at a point that you like really shouldn't be. I'm going to kill you.
Right. Talk to me again. You'll wish you fucking hadn't. You'll fucking wish you hadn't. And she said, I know what you're doing and I don't want any part of it. She shoved him. Because Yuta had done something so funny too, where he has that hair in his eyes all the time, which is so funny, and he'd like raked it out of his eyes. I was like, I don't know what that is.
Just love it's like weirdly effective, but I don't know what it's there was doing, but I loved
know,
it.
Right, I don't know what it indicated, but it kind of electrified me. I guess I just love seeing my grandchildren perform in the school play. Mm-hmm. It was such a good job.
Yeah, really started the show.
So star. And so she shoved him away and she turned around abruptly and immediately bumped into John Moxley's beautiful bare chest.
Oh my God. It was so hairy. I don't know if he's like been letting it grow, but there was so much more and she ran right into it and she had this look on her face like, oh no.
Yeah. But like also a little like horny scared, you know, just like, I'm not supposed to be that near this chest.
He's married, but I'm having some feelings. Yeah.
And so she had dropped her phone as she turned and Mox picked it up. This was like, they both did a phenomenal job. This worked so well.
They moved so slow and they had such neutral expressions. And it was like, they were holding their breath. I was holding my breath. Yeah. I was like, what's going to happen?
What's going to happen? And Mox picked up her phone, gave it back to her and said, don't ever. And you were like, oh my God, don't ever touch Yuta. Like I thought everyone was allowed to.
That's what he's for.
I know. Don't ever let anybody tell you who you are and what you're worth. And then he turned around and left. And Chris was just left staring after him. Like, mm-hmm. just like, you know, hand limp around her phone. Just like, what just happened to me? I'm a woman.
Yeah. The amount that Chris has, like, leveled up mm-hmm. this week yeah. and last week. Like, because, like, she did a great job with Yuna, like, her, mm-hmm. like, delivery and her face acting. And then with Mox. And they were two very different interactions. But they were both, like, perfect and really interesting, too, mm-hmm. where it's like, oh, are they kind of recruiting her to the Death Riders? And she has history with Yuna, but she's, yeah. you know, in this thing with Willow, and Willow's fighting the Death Rider. I was just like, this is much more of a, like, complicated mm-hmm. and interesting storyline than I thought they were, like, ever going to do.
Yeah,
with this.
So yeah.
She's pulling it off.
This is them 100%, like, making use of stuff that I had no idea that they ever would. Like, it mm-hmm. is so interesting for Chris to be in a place where she went bad and then regretted being bad and tried mm-hmm. to make amends. But she had yeah. hurt Willow so much that Willow wasn't ready to accept her amends. And instead mm-hmm. of continuing, Chris was like, well, if you're not going to take my offered hand, then I'm not going to stand here holding it out. Like, mm-hmm. That's interesting and real. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It is so human to be like, yeah. well, if you're not going to accept my apology, then I'm not going to apologize. Like, I don't know. It's just like, right. I like it so mm-hmm. much.
Yeah. And it's a great way to have her, like, end up going back heel. Cause it's like, cause it's easier and it's there. And these guys do want to hang out with you maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing that would be so interesting. Like, if she does turn, and I don't know if she will or not. I could see it going both ways, but if she did turn heel again, that's the kind of thing that's so interesting to use down the line. Like, to have someone be like, the last time things got, you try to do the right thing, it was hard, so you gave up. Like,
right.
but if you really want to do the right thing, you can't give up. Like, you right. have to do it even mm-hmm. when it's thankless. And, like, even when nobody, there's no reward and, like, nobody will acknowledge you. Like, you just keep doing the right thing. The right thing is its own reward. No one's going to say right. that on wrestling, but I wish they would. Like, the right thing is its own reward. That would right. be so powerful to be like, try mm-hmm. again, but, like, do it for the right reason.
Right.
Yeah.
That'd be really sexy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, so they had this four-way. It was fun. The women constructed a real murder machine on the turnbuckle. You don't see this type every day. I'll say that. This was, and we got to see Athena, which we obviously very rarely seen on AEW TV, so that's very exciting. And came out with Billy Starks, who I said looks like a Delia's catalog came to life. Mm-hmm. So cute. And then towards the end of the match, Marina Shafir came out. She distracted Willow. They were, like, having a back and forth that let Yuta sneak up on Willow. He attacked her, and then Chris subsequently took the opportunity to land a pile driver on Willow for the win. So she's number one, first in the casino gauntlet, which matters. And she had some loaded looks with Marina, and then Marina left and Yuta left, and then she was just standing there doing face acting on her own. And again, it was pretty high-level face acting. She was doing a really nice job.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
for someone who's just like, I don't know what to do. Or, like, I think I did something bad, but maybe I'm just someone who's going to do bad things again. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's complicated. Like, she didn't ask them to do it. She didn't want them to, but she got the benefits. And then also,
She took advantage of it.
She took advantage of it. And also, like, of course, when you try to apologize and someone won't accept your apology, then you're kind of mad at them. And so Will's on the other side, you know, and they have this tension. Like, it's a surprisingly complicated emotional situation that she's in.
It's great. Yeah, because it is. It's like, what do you want me to do? Just, like, be sorry forever? And it's like, that's kind of what you have to do if you're really sorry. Like, no matter what the other person does, you just kind of have to, like, be sorry forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right. So I thought really, really good. And then the final thing that we'll just kind of, like, zoom through. Ricochet recruited AR Fox to team up with him to fight Jet Speed, the normalest couple of all time. They, did I really write this? They double-teamed AR Fox for the win after Ricochet refused to be tagged in to assist. Afterwards, Tony Schiavone interviewed Jet Speed, and they were like, we want the tag titles. So the Hurt Syndicate came out and just straight up immediately murdered them, which was like, oh, okay. I guess. And then MVP yelled at the division for being pussies for quite a while. And then MJF said, I'm going to compete for the Casino Gauntlet. I'm going to be in my own qualifier match for that, even though there's a qualifier tonight, but I'll be in a different one. There's two qualifiers, which is right. It's right that the one and two positions are the same. It's as good to be number two as to be number one in this match. Mm-hmm. So it does make sense to compete for both of those spots.
But that's probably not, should have said it's the qualifying match that. For the number two spot, because you're kind of like, wait, why is everybody else just in it?
Or somebody should have said it. Even if he didn't want to say it, somebody should have been like, well, he means for the number two spot, actually.
Right. Like commentary, somebody. But apparently he said it on Twitter. And on Twitter, like they were like, why didn't you say that in your promo? And he said, I shouldn't have to spoon feed you guys. And it's like, that's like basic facts. Otherwise, it just seems like you're begging to get into a match that everybody else just floated into.
When it's fun, because it's like, it would make sense for MJF as a character to be like, I don't want to say like I'm competing for the number two anything, like it's a special match for me, but then the onus is on commentary to be like, well, this is what he means, and he just doesn't want to say that it's the number two spot. And then that would be all, that would all be very, you know, consistent characterization. Anyway,
I do feel this, find this whole situation kind of fascinating, because now he's just kind of like the number four guy in the Hurt Syndicate, which is interesting.
And it's he's textually the bottom of the totem pole, because MVP keeps, in a way that I can only assume is purposeful, keeps interrupting him all the time. So it's,
and he, this week he like grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and was like holding him back. And I think Rich Latta has been consistently describing it as little brothering him, which I love.
So so I don't understand why it's happening. You know, I don't know why any of this is happening. But that's not our business. So then
this is a soggy beginning to end.
There won't be any firm parts to put together. You know, maybe one firm part at the end and all the sog falls off, but I doubt it. So Mark Briscoe then does, I think he's the first person in history to just come out and in the history of wrestling to just explicitly come out and say, I booked the ring. I actually booked the ring, and you guys are running way over. And if you look at the pad by the door, like, you can see I booked it on Teams. I'm supposed to be there. So please leave. And they got into a back and forth because MJF and company didn't like that. And Mark Briscoe was like, dude, just go to therapy. We don't have to have this whole conversation. Which, Leah, your way of describing what was going on with Mark Briscoe, I know you kind of said it earlier, but it was just so funny where you're just like, yeah, Mark Briscoe, I guess, can just walk into any storyline and just be like, I'm a moral person, so let me tell you your life.
At any point, if you're having a feud in AEW, you have to be aware that at any point, Mark Briscoe could wander in and lay his judgment and wander back out.
And I was thinking about it, and then I guess it's just because, probably it's partly because they keep, MJF kept being like, you're a chicken farmer, go pick up chicken shit. But I was like, is Mark Briscoe kind of like, he's kind of like the narrator right now, where he's like always coming in and being like, do you know what the story is? Let me tell you about it. And then I was like, he's like the rooster in the 1970s Robin Hood, animated Robin Hood. So he's like got his little banjo. He's like, Robin Hood, little John running through the forest. He's like walking in and just like, you might be wondering how we ended up in the Nottingwood jail. Well, let me tell you a little something about that.
It works really well because I can imagine Mark Briscoe saying, oodalali, oodalali.
Oodalali, oodalali, gala, what a day. I'm actually pretty upset that I haven't heard him say it, and maybe never will hear him say oodalali, oodalali, golly.
If anyone from AEW is listening right now,
please, just float it. Just float it.
Feed a little oodalali.
Yeah, feed a little oodalali. Amen, sister. Anyway, they get into it, and they talk about how small MJF's dick is, and that's their business, you know. I don't need to hear about that.
I know. I really like the first part of this, where he was like, this is all coming from, like, a place of insecurity, and then he went to the small dick stuff, and I was like, okay, well.
I guess an insecurity that you all share, I suppose, if you're even commenting on it. And then Mark Briscoe then went on to win the actual number one spot qualifier versus Bandido, Takeshita, and Roddy Strong. And so he's going to be in the Casino Gauntlet. And then MJF, I assume, will win his. So then they'll be the first two in there, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Anything could happen. Yeah. And that's what you missed on Glee. And then Christian and Nick are going to try and win the tag team titles. And actually, I immediately was like, yeah, let them have them. Yeah, that'd be great.
I was like, I'd have that piece for that. Yeah. I've actually, especially if they're like heading towards breaking up, I was like, I've actually never seen a father-son tag partners that are also fighting. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm willing to be taken on that ride. I'd love that.
Seems complicated. Yeah. I would love to see Mother Wayne and Kip Sabian have kind of like a first wife, first dog energy. First dog. I think that could be fun. So,
yeah.
I'll vote for it. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about that you did not get the opportunity to talk about tonight?
We very, very briefly went by, but I just want to say that Ricochet's continuing bit where he auditions friends and then hates them. Very funny. Very funny. It is. I like it.
It is. And honestly,
just this week, just thinking like Ricochet and Toni Storm, like if you had told me like at a certain point with both of them that this is where we'd be, I would never have believed you. And it's just, they're both incredible.
Yeah. And it's funny for Ricochet to be a bit of a counterpoint to Ospreay, because Ospreay, everyone's kind of counterpoint to Ospreay right now. Ospreay is like, I need friends really badly and I like everybody and they don't seem to like me and I'm trying really hard to get one. And Ricochet is like, I need friends very badly and I got on that like friend dating Bumble and I keep going on these fucking dates and I hate them all. I fucking hate them. Everybody fucking blows.
He's wandering through AEW just being like, I want someone to make me feel the way I felt when I stood between the Bucks. Is that so fucking hard?
That's so fucking hard. Yeah, that's very good. Okay, well, I think that's all for us then. And on that note, I'm Allie.
I've been Anne.
And I've been Leah.
I did it wrong. This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme is by Chris Gorkin. You can find us on Twitter, Tumblr, Twitch, and Blue Sky at Tunnel Talk Pod via email, tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. We have a souvenir stand. You can find it at chop-tees.com. You can find us on our feed, on the Social Suplex Network feed, where you can check out all the other great podcasts on the network. And you can find us on the Social Suplex Network Discord. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay frosty. And as always, please, come back next week.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.